Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drill Grizzly. Guess what, James?
What?
This is the 40th episode of Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Woo! Woo!
So that's a pretty big milestone, I think. Yeah. I don't know if 40 is usually a milestone, but it kind of is.
In life, it would be a milestone.
Yeah, I guess it would be.
They say halfway?
Life begins at 40, right?
Oh, yeah.
I heard that before. So I wonder if for Vancouver Tech Podcast, our life is just beginning.
Yeah, I guess so.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, we're almost at 1 year. I guess a couple of months will be to 1 year. We started November 2015.
Yeah, we're still a few months away from that, I think. But so. It's still August. It's still summer. We're not really getting into early winter or late fall yet.
Yeah, we haven't had the fun of running to our recording space in raincoats with umbrellas yet.
No, not yet.
So we know it's 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty good. Things are really coming along. We actually have a pretty good set of guests lined up as well.
Sweet.
For anyone who's listening, if you're interested in being on, feel free to reach out to myself or James and we'll line that up. We usually schedule about a month or so ahead, but
yeah.
It's been some pretty awesome times.
You can either reach out to either of us or we also have an email for the show, which is show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite episode so far, James?
Favorite episode? I don't want to isolate any of our guests or single out any of our guests. I actually was really happy with Angela Bortolussi, the recruiter. She was really fun. She was a good guest. Who else comes to the top of mind?
I was going
to
say, one of the episodes that really sticks out in my mind, at least, was the one where you were on vacation.
Oh.
And so that was it was a lot of fun. Yeah, we had Biotab on, and that was really good. But I was pretty nervous a little bit, just like to kind of...
Flying solo.
Well, yeah, I was actually really worried that I was going to hit delete and just kind of not save anything. But it ended up coming off without a hitch, I think.
Ryan St. Germain from BC Jobs was cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
And even I like Skio Music, too. That was like one of the first ones we had with like two people.
Yep.
Yeah, that one was fun. Yeah, I guess we'll have to do a year in review at some point and figure out like what... what's going on?
Yeah, we've had a lot of interesting ones. We did have a couple of students. We wanted to get someone from each of the boot camps, so maybe we'll have to follow up with some of the other ones. We had two students come out from Code Core, and we said we'd follow up with them in a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also going to be coming up pretty soon, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, we're still a few months away.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Did you have a busy week last week, or was it chill, nice and summer week?
It was pretty chill, pretty nice. Well... really busy, I guess, work-wise.
yeah.
Right? Super busy. So busy. I've just been like, I feel like I try and go into work early so I can catch up. And I think some people like to stay late, whereas I'm kind of the opposite. I like to go early.
Yeah, me too.
So like go in at 6, for example.
Oh, really?
Go in at 7.
Wow.
And instead of, staying till like 7 or 8 or 9.
Yeah.
So kind of leave a little bit earlier. But I usually, yesterday, I stayed until about 6:30.
Oh, nice.
We have a lot of stuff to kind of get done and some deadlines and people relying on other things. And,
sure.
This person's going to get blocked by this if I don't finish it by...
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And so, that's been pretty busy. But something that I thought was interesting in the Slacks, the Contracts and Jobs channel particularly, that's been really a popular channel, I guess.
Yeah. Now there's Meta Contracts and Jobs too.
Is there?
It's supposed to talk about things that aren't like, I know that's Contracts and Jobs is kind of a, sometimes can be a controversial channel where people are talking about work as a philosophy or almost like they're almost like philosophizing inside of the Contracts and Jobs, which isn't always a bad thing, but some people are like, this is for job posts.
Well, see, that's an interesting,
'cause those get lost.
It's a really interesting thing. Yeah. I kind of thought that at first too, but who makes those rules? And
who
decides that? Just because is something said Contracts and Jobs, does that mean we have to bring down the law and say this is only for posting contracts and jobs? Or maybe it is generally talking about contracts and jobs.
Yeah.
And I thought something that I thought was really cool was the conversation does seem to deviate a little bit, but it's usually on that general topic.
Oh yeah.
And from time to time, people will say, like, hey, can we keep this to Contracts and Jobs?
Yeah, someone will chime in.
It's somewhat self-regulating.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. But anyway, going back to the actual conversations that have been happening there, I've noticed a kind of an influx of people from Brazil, and I think this was from Ilya's invites. And it's maybe not that many. It's maybe like 5 or 10 people.
Sure.
Out of like 1,000.
Yeah.
But they just happen to be fairly active over the past couple of weeks. But a lot of people are asking different things like, can I get a job you know, I have 10 years experience in IT, but I've never worked as a developer. Is it possible to get a job as a developer? Mm-hmm. I thought this was in Vancouver. I thought these were some interesting questions. Another question that came up was like, what sort of languages does the job market need experience in?
Like, what is Vancouver looking for?
And this is pretty interesting, is people are like, oh, JavaScript. Oh, Ruby, yeah. Ruby. And I think that's kind of neat. And it seems like maybe that's true, maybe it's not. I wonder, like, what's a good way to get good statistics on that? Surely there's, I posted a link to Amazon because they represent something like 300 jobs that they're hiring.
Yeah, for sure.
So take a look at what they're looking for. Which probably they might have some interest in Ruby and some in JavaScript. I think they do a lot of Java, a lot of C, and a lot of kind of...
I think Python, too. A lot of their tool chain is Python. There's CLI scripts and stuff. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And then also Microsoft's probably hiring a lot. I think there's still like Java and C# are still pretty solid languages. I did a quick Google search and I was like, oh, wow, the number one language of 2016, SQL. I was like, I don't know anybody who identifies as a SQL programmer.
No. I think what I suspect they have like a huge list of languages, and it's like, what do you use at work? And people check off SQL, but then they check off the primary language that they use. SQL is almost like tertiary, like not even secondary. Like we talked about like Bash scripts being like really, really popular. Like how come that isn't on there if that's like if we're talking about scripts or even almost like query languages? That seems like a very strange thing. Someone saying it's like I'm fluent in command line or fluent in Linux or Unix or whatever you'd call it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting. What do you think? You were recently, I guess, looking.
Yeah.
What do you think the job market looks like?
Yeah, anecdotally, I would say in my sphere was Ruby and JavaScript were the two that popped up the most.
Yeah.
Even the JavaScript was like, it was actually a lot more front-end JavaScript than server-side. So it was a lot of Angular. I know that you guys are looking for Angular people. Mm-hmm. And even a lot of the guests that we've had on are using Angular. Like a lot of people are using Angular. So it just, you know, that's what JavaScript is. So I found that. And then Ruby was like really high up there as well.
By some Ruby, node. You mean Rails, right?
Yeah, I mean Rails, yeah. Which I didn't see any like vanilla Ruby stuff. It didn't come across, although I wasn't really looking. So, you know, keep that in mind.
Yeah, I've come across a couple of places that are predominantly Ruby, but not Rails. And I thought they were definitely the exception.
Like the place you used to work at, Mogo, they used primarily Ruby without a framework, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. What did you think? Is there something that you've noticed that has popped up or something that's died down?
Not really. I guess it's more surprisingly to me than anything else was how prevalent PHP still is. I didn't know. I thought, you know, everybody was using something else like Python or Ruby. So Python, I've noticed a couple of shops using Python. I think Bench uses Python. Skio Music is predominantly Python.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But here's another thing. How many places, this is something that's always surprising to me when I hear of this happening. How many places would say, oh, you've got, you know, 10 years development experience. Oh, but you don't know Python. We're not going to hire you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a place out there that would do that? And for sure, I think for me, that would definitely not be the type of place or people that I would want to work with that would not identify actual development skills and just look at language specific skills. On the other hand, I can see how hitting the ground running and having a particular mastery of, I guess, the syntax and being able to write idiomatic code in that language are very beneficial. But still, I think for a seasoned developer, that's something that wouldn't take too long to pick up.
I think that there's a difference between fluency and quality. So like if you memorize all the keywords and all the methods for all the different classes or whatever you want to call it, or like you memorized all the keywords in the language, sure, you're going to be faster to write. But if you're new and you're being very careful, I think you can output the same quality, but maybe not the same speed, especially if you're using things like tests. Like tests will tell you right away if your code is failing, whether that's a syntax error, the output of the function is wrong, or, you know, just even just something else is busted.
Mm-hmm. So, I thought you were going to go somewhere really a different direction with what you started out with. And I thought that made a lot of sense, though you didn't go there, which was that I think it's interesting just because you've kind of got the syntax of a particular language doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be writing good quality code in
it. Faster.
And maybe you don't know that language very well, but you do have good coding methodology, or you have a good idea of how to write quality code. Get separations of concerns and write modular code, then maybe picking up a new language might. And at the same time, I mean, most of the languages I think we use are kind of C-based languages. So there is some variation in the syntax, but is it that huge that I don't know.
Yeah, like even like looking at an if statement in a for loop between Ruby, PHP, JavaScript, Lua, Go, like they're all very similar. Mm-hmm. Like they're not going to change that much. Some of them are actually identical. You can like copy and paste stuff from Lua into JavaScript, change one word, and it's done. Mm-hmm. Like even with PHP, you remove like the dollar sign on the variables, and it's the exact same. So I mean, I think it's like that concept over implementation maybe. Might be a stronger thing.
I guess maybe text editor or IDE settings.
Yeah, if you have an IDE, it's auto completing for you or linting for you, like running tests or linting your code, making sure you're not making mistakes, maybe suggesting things like, hey, you've got your stuff backwards, or this undefined thing is never used, or whatever. It might help you out that way.
So, do you think that is a relevant question? What sort of languages are prevalent in Vancouver, and what should I have a brush up on for getting a job?
I think there's always going to be a company for the language that you picked, because somebody there, you know, most languages, if they're out there and you're learning them, they were popular at one point, or someone picked them up and used them in production, most likely, unless you're using some like toy language. So I think that, but I mean, if you're someone that's like, I need a job, then it might make sense just to see what the most common job is and just go that route. Is it important? I think it's up to you. Like, do you want to write something that you love, or do you want to just have a job? So if you want to write something that you love, look for the job that fits the skill you have or the thing you want to use.
I kind of feel that there are enough jobs out there right now that within reason, I think you could pick languages that you're comfortable with and probably find a job that in that field. So even, for example, you know, Rust.
Yeah.
You could probably find a job working in Rust in Vancouver.
Sure.
Particularly at Mozilla.
Yeah, right? Definitely. But,
and maybe Lua, if you really like writing in Lua.
Games. Right. A lot of game engines. There's like four or five different things I came across. I was interested in like maybe checking it out. But
are there some languages that you would avoid?
Probably some of the functional languages that I have no even.
But even that, like Haskell, I think there's some companies that are looking for people who are interested in writing stuff in Haskell.
Yeah, it would Stitch, be something like, it wouldn't be something like if it was like, you're doing this and also Haskell, like you're doing something you're comfortable with, plus you're going to learn some Haskell. Cool. If it was like, tomorrow you're going to start with Haskell, I'd be like, you know, maybe that might be a bit more of a personal decision of like, well, I don't like, I like learning on my own, and learning under the pressure of production is a little bit much.
I think if the company was on board with me learning on the job and having no experience with Haskell, I would jump all over that, because I think that would be amazing.
I'd want
but
a primer.
But at the same time, at the same time, I don't think I'd be too productive on day one.
Yeah, exactly. So that might be something to think about. But I mean, as far as like learning alternatives on the job, like I think absolutely, like that'd be cool. Like even learning where, like I'm diving a little bit more into the Node world of ES6 as far as like, well, the browsers, not all of them support it, and it's not something that we write, we transpiler code now from ES6 to whatever. So like that is a little bit more of a jump to, well, now we're able to experiment with these new things. They're maybe not a different language, but it's maybe different concepts or different versions. And even just moving a lot of stuff to Node, as far as like Node gets a lot more mature and a lot more stable, I'm expanding my reach into those territories as well.
But I think actually that probably does hold true. You can't go wrong with JavaScript.
Yeah, right. You can't go wrong with JavaScript.
So that's
front end or back end or both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Cool. So let's hop into
meetups around town. Awesome. So not a fat week this week. Very slender, slim week.
Well, let's start with last week first of all. So we had summer's getting into the swing.
Peak summer.
Yeah. Finally. How was your week? Did you make it out to anything? Were there some events you wanted to go to that you didn't go to?
You know what?
Interview. Remember interview?
Oh, the interview prep. Yeah.
I didn't make it to that. I think it was actually already sold out by the time we even saw it.
Yeah, there was like two or three tickets left. That was at Tableau, right? Or run by Tumblr?
Run by Tableau. I think it was somewhere else. Yeah. I was a little disappointed that they didn't actually ask us or invite us to come. Would have been
a little scorned.
Yeah. but it did seem pretty awesome. I would have liked to have gone to that. Didn't make it out to it. Was really busy with other things.
Yeah.
I did go to one other event, and saw you there.
Microsoft Foosball.
That's right. Yeah, it was a Foosball Invitational.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of nailed it, being the worst group there.
The worst of the best.
Well, we're not really, you know, we don't have a Foosball. Yeah. We don't play Foosball all the time.
Yeah.
Unlike some of the teams there that brought their own tape. And we're just like, I'm pretty sure they hired some professional foosball players from somewhere to come just for that.
Just to trounce the other teams. Yeah.
Global Relay was one of the ones.
Oh yeah, those guys were nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to Open Coffee on Tuesday morning.
Oh, did you? Nice.
Yeah. So I finally did. I've gone before, a couple times before actually, and I kept saying like it's on the way to work. I can make it sometime.
Yeah.
And then on Monday I was like, you know what? I need to get up early, get a Open Coffee. I went. It was fun.
Awesome.
A little chat. Had a nice coffee. It was a nice way to start the morning.
Sweet. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Had a little chat. Had some nice coffee.
Yeah. So I think everyone there, I didn't recognize a single person there, which is, I find strange at this point, like being this like meetup junkie, which was good. Like, it's good that I see a different crowd of people.
I thought that was actually really interesting at the Microsoft foosball thing was that it was almost all people that I haven't seen regularly at some of the meetups. So I don't know if this is indicative of there being an influx in new people all the time, or just that our tech scene is actually a lot bigger than we might notice if you go to some of the regular meetups and see the regular people. I've noticed HackerNest does have a fair influx of new people, but there's still about 20% that are people who've been there before.
Oh, yeah, I would agree 100%. Like, I think we knew maybe one or two people there.
Knew Stacy.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to think if I knew someone else or even just had seen someone else. I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it was all hadn't seen from other
Which is surprising because it was maybe 80 people, something like that.
I'd say more than that.
More than 80?
It seemed like about 150, I thought.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. Okay. My math's off. Or my
counting's
off.
It was a pretty big space.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Maybe it was misleading of how many people were actually there. Plus, I think there are people coming and going and stuff like that.
That was really nice of them. They also gave us the plaque. So we have the Vancouver Tech Podcast plaque. We had t-shirts made, which was awesome. I think it was a good excuse to just have some fun.
Yeah, get some swag.
Yeah.
Have a couple of drinky poos on Microsoft.
Yeah. And they actually, it looks like they're really interested in hosting other things in their space. So like indie games meetups or other things like that. And it looks like Stacy would be the person to reach out to.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that because when they launched their building, they're like, oh yeah, we're going to have so much community outreach stuff. And, you know, sometimes a lot of companies will say that, but it doesn't always come to fruition. There's a lot of companies that you hear about in town that maybe don't have a lot of events, but Microsoft's really actually stuck to their word. And they're,
I think a lot of the time the intention's there, but getting the right people to do it isn't something that's necessarily super easy.
Yeah.
I think that they've definitely got the right people there, and that makes a big difference. So
I think they also probably feel a little bit obligated to the community as far as as far as I know, the city helped them build that, helped them, you know, move there. Or supported them in some way, as far as I could tell. There was based on some,
I don't know,
the mayor and the premier and the prime minister being there. I think there was some extra push, so I think there's probably some obligation. But it's great because it's where we get to benefit.
Yeah. All right. So we've got a interesting week coming up. Now, you said it's not the super fat week or a big week, but it's actually a pretty big week. We got some interesting things happening.
Yeah, definitely.
We have this special event, but this is Startup Week Hackathon. This is over at Telus Garden. And anyway, there's a 50% off code. If you're interested in going there, you do have to sign up and get tickets. How much are they?
These are $50.
$50. And you can get 50% off if you're a HackerNest member. I'm not sure if this will work for non-HackerNest members. It might. But anyway, Rally Team VIP. Capital R, capital VIP, Rally Team VIP, all one word.
Cool.
So we'll post that down below.
Yeah, definitely.
But that was nice of them to kind of reach out to us.
Yeah, that's awesome. This the same thing. I think this is a couple times. I'm not sure how many times they've done this event as far as like annually, but basically every year at the end of September, you get to go to all these different events for an entire week.
But anyway, get in on that. That's next month.
All right, let's jump to Monday then, the 22nd.
So Monday, we've got our standard Git Help and Zero Tech over at Decentral, 436 West Pender Street from 4 to 6. Make sure to bring your laptop to that. Have some fun with Git and talk Zero Tech. Then we've got Van Lug. So they got an interesting one coming up. This is the Linux users group from 7 p.m. And it says here, this is their troll meetup or something, the troll fest.
Yeah.
So this is, they're covering topics like Emacs or Vim, GNOME or KDE, Linux or BSD.
Yeah.
Come troll your fellow FOSS enthusiasts regarding your choice in software or lack of option.
Spaces, tabs, semicolons, no semicolons. That'll help extra trollage in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. That's
all right,
awesome.
And that's our Monday. So we got Tuesday the 23rd. This is to start out with, we got Vancouver Closure happening at CodeCore, 142 West Pender. Make sure to bring a laptop to that as well and be ready to work on some Clojure stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some people there that can help you out getting started, but I don't know. I haven't actually been. Maybe we should go and work on something in
Clojure. I have been. I kind of went to one tangentially because I was doing the PHP meetup at the same time as the Clojure one, so I got to peek in and see what was going on. So that was cool.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely check that out. Hackathon.
Yeah.
Or then, Hack Night, I should say.
Yep. That's at 6 p.m. Then there's Van Bug, so the BSD users group. And they're doing the certification materials. This is over at 515 West Hastings at SFU. Mm-hmm. And this is in Suite 1500, the Xerox room there, from 7 p.m.
Cool.
So for this one, I think all of the materials are available online, but they are going through the Associate Certificate Study Group.
It's almost like basically a study group, right? Like a working group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And then we got Wednesday the 24th. So BrainStation, they have from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. an info session to find your place in tech. So if you're wondering, if you're interested about getting into tech or maybe even transitioning from one area of tech to another, this might be a good thing to go and just hang out and see what's going on.
Yeah, you basically describe what your current situation is, and they're going to try to help place you in one of the many different opportunities that the tech industry has.
Yeah, so actually for them, their courses right now are like digital marketing, product mm-hmm. management, user experience design, user interface design, and web development. So it's probably going to be in and around that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, and the Vancouver Pluralsight Study Group.
So this is coming up from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday. Definitely bring your laptop to this one and a Pluralsight subscription, or be ready to sign up for one, I guess.
Yeah, it's at the P&I Digital Media offices, 100-425 Carroll Street, first floor, Thursday.
Let's start out at 4:30. We got the DDD CQRS ES Practitioners. This is always a great one. I would definitely bring a laptop to that. Usually have a bit of a fireside chat, maybe mm-hmm. talking about some past experiences. That usually leads into some kind of a workshop-y session on doing some event storming and then actually doing some coding as well.
Yeah. So
this is from 4:30 to 7.
This is a great meetup for a team. Bring your whole team and
make sure to check it out. And then we got Startup Drinks Vancouver. So this one is pretty interesting. This is kind of like open coffee, but with drinks in the evening.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to this one a few times. Haven't been lately, but I think maybe I'll try to squeeze in another thing, because this one does start at 6 p.m., but it does go quite late, actually.
Yeah, it starts at 6. There's different waves of people that come. And, you know, you could show up at 7. You could probably show up at 10, and there might be one person there,
yeah.
3 people there, 10 people there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like different groups come and go. But it's good to just kind of sit, have a drink, and chat tech.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about bringing a laptop to that one. And that's over at 131 Water Kitchen and Bar.
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite events, Code and Coffee.
Yeah, Code and Coffee. So from 6:30 to 8:30, this is over at Mobify, which is 948 Homer. That's number 300. I would bring a laptop to this for sure.
Yeah, personally. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes they have talks, and they have almost like a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did a talk here, I did one on Chrome apps and extensions, which, if you've heard the news, Chrome apps are no longer going to be a thing outside of Chrome OS, but Chrome apps and extensions. And I did a little course on how to build your first extension. So that happens sometimes as well. So definitely bring your laptop.
Yeah, that sounds pretty awesome. And then also the Learn Data Science. So this is happening at CBRE 25th floor, 1021 West Hastings. What's CBRE?
They do like real estate, like commercial real estate, I think.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. So this is happening from 6 to 8. And I would make sure to read the group. This is the, competitions. Kaggle competitions. Song prediction sounds pretty awesome. So bring your laptop to that and be ready to hack on some Kaggle competition.
Cool.
And that's Thursday, right? So
yeah.
Friday we have, I'm not sure how tech related it is. It is at BrainStation, which is kind of a tech related institution, but they're having a block party. So they have this, I think, once a month, where they just kind of invite people from the neighborhood and from the tech community or from the community to come by. So they might be showcasing local artists' artwork and having some wine. I think it's like $10 or something, or 20.
Yeah, 20 bucks. Well, we'll link to the event.
$20 Canadian.
Okay, $20 Canadian for the event.
All right, and it looks like that is our week in meetups around town. All right, and we're here with our special guest on the Vancouver Tech Podcast, Ev Navranuk. Thanks for joining us, Ev.
Yeah, it's awesome to be here. It's really good to meet you guys.
Sweet. Good to meet you as well. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? You're obviously at Cumulate. So yep. Tell us about yourself and tell us a little bit about Cumulate.
Yeah, so my journey to the development world was kind of a strange one. Right out of high school, I really wanted to be an animator,
mm-hmm.
like working for movies and stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. My whole family came from a pretty computer science-y background.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was always kind of surrounded by that. And
you're
I just really,
artist.
I wanted to rebel. Yeah. I wanted to be the artist who is not the computer geek.
So what were some of your, what were some of the animations or some of your heroes in animation that...
I was always like a really, really big fan of like pushing the realism boundaries. So mm-hmm. anybody who tried to do something like super like 3D realism kind of thing, I really loved that. Like especially when Pixar started doing stuff, mm-hmm. that just started to blow me away because it was like both cartoony and like super realistic. So obviously the goal of any animating kid is to work at Pixar. So that was what I was like striving for, right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, I went through, I went to college to study actually animation at Emily Carr.
Mm-hmm.
So I was totally convinced that I was going to kind of pursue that career. And I got hired by a Vancouver studio here to do animation right out of that. So it was a company called Generate at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were doing is they're converting 2D to 3D.
Oh, wow.
So,
cool.
So basically taking a 2D movie and then making it 3D so you can wear your glasses and stuff and do the real thing. So without having to have 3D cameras film the movie, studios could film it in 2D, send it over to Generate, and then they would convert it over to do 3D.
So this would be live action video that you'd be converting.
Exactly, yeah. And so the process is actually pretty labor intensive because basically what you had to do is you had to recreate the whole movie.
Right.
In 3D, and then layer the original footage over top of it and have all the artists paint over all of the missing gaps and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of work and stuff. And so I did that for a while, and it was kind of fun because, you know, I get to have my name on all the movie credits and stuff. Like, I could say, hey, I worked on Harry Potter, and then, like, cool. This is pretty cool, right?
That's cool.
Did you work on Harry Potter?
I did, yeah.
Nice.
I just caught the last one. And then after a while, I realized, you know, this is really like labor intensive and like a lot of work to be an animator. And luckily, what happened is the company I was at, the Generate, they had a pretty heavy tech background. Like they had an entire tech team that was supporting the artists and making sure the whole process was working well. And I was kind of starting not to feel the whole animation vibe anymore. And I've always kind of been doing programming on the side just because of...
Just
kind of making websites and stuff like that. So I kind of knew a little bit of code.
Isn't there a lot of crossover between animation and code sometimes? Like a lot of plugins have like Python interfaces
and
stuff like that. Yeah,
the whole movie industry is in Python.
Yeah,
like every single app. A lot of the artists know Python because they actually have to code how like a certain characters move and behave and all sorts of stuff. So there's a lot of like tech overlap in the visual effects industry. And so basically I asked to transition to the technical team. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to being an artist, I thought, hey, maybe I could write software for animators like me.
Yep.
And so, you know, the company was kind of like, oh, an animator wanting to write code. That's kind of weird. I don't know if that's going to work out, but why don't we give you a shot?
Yeah.
And so luckily they gave me a shot and I kind of was able to pick it up really quick and kind of transitioned into the programming world. And I've been there ever since.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, that's a good transition.
Yeah.
That's like you're like a Vancouver stereotype, half like movies and development or technology or whatever you call it. I guess now the modern Vancouver, I guess, is movies and tech, which is kind of funny. You've been in both industries now.
Vancouver especially is crazy for that because Vancouver's huge for the movies, movie stuff. And it's getting pretty big in terms of, you know, software development and startups and that sort of thing.
Cool.
I didn't realize that was the stereotype, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
You're a stereotype. You're right.
That was always like living in Ontario. That was the stereotype. Oh, they do a bunch of movies over there. That's like the movie Hollywood North thing, like that whole thing. Yeah. And then I guess now like hearing about the companies that are here are it's technology as well. A lot of fintech stuff. And, you know, that's sort of the reputation, I think, outside of the city or outside of the province.
Awesome. Okay. So let's jump over to Cumulate. Tell us a bit about what is Cumulate and what's your role there? How'd you get involved?
Yeah, so the idea with Cumulate is actually, so the company Generate that I was working at, basically what happened is we decided as a company to take the technology that we wrote for the movie studios and kind of form an entire company just writing software for movie studios, and that became Cumulate. So I actually, I stayed with that same company, we just kind of transitioned as to what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So you changed positions just at the right time, then.
It was the perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
I was at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
It was pretty incredible. And so what Cumulate is so right now we have three products, but it started off as really just one product, which was the kind of the asset and task management system for movie studios. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that, you know, you're working on a movie. You obviously have a whole bunch of artists working for you to actually make the movie. These artists are creating a lot of stuff, right? They're working on lots of different shots, and they're contributing to the whole pipeline. They're making lots of files and stuff, and somebody has to track all of that, and they need to assign things to the artists and all of that stuff. So we basically built an internal software for that, which is called Stratus.
Cool.
And so I kind of originally started on that team that was building that software. Actually, I was the guy who originally kind of made the initiative to write this thing in the first place. And so it kind of grew and grew and grew to the point where it just became an entire product all of its own. And now it's got an entirely dedicated team just to support that. And so that's kind of, that's one of the aspects of what Cumulate does. I haven't worked on that software for a few years now because one thing we realized pretty quick is after writing that thing is a lot of companies that were had nothing to do with the movie industry started approaching us. And they're like, man, this thing that you guys have for the movies is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I actually am in the logging business. I would love to have something like this in my business too. Can you build me something like that? Yeah. So we started like having different like industries come to us that were all kind of having the same type of problem. They're all have a whole bunch of things they got to track. They all have a bunch of people who are working on things. And then, you know, some executives asks like, hey, how's my company doing? Like, and so they got to bubble all of this information all the way up to the executive level. So we kind of looked at what we had and we realized, you know, we can probably take this platform that we have that we use for tracking all the movie assets and stuff. And we can probably elaborate on it a little bit, modify it so that it actually works for any industry. And so that's what we did with our next product line, which is called Cirrus. And so the idea there is that it's now much more of a custom solution. It's not just a thing you buy off the shelf. So what we do is we work with very large companies, like Fortune 500 kind of companies.
Can you talk about any of the...
I can't name a lot of them, but I can give you some industries. So we work obviously still with the film industry. We work with a company in gaming. We work in a company with forestry. So if you think of some of the biggest, you know, companies in those industries, you probably might know the names of the real ones that we work with. So the idea there is that so the these companies will approach us. They'll usually have a whole bunch of data that they're already collecting. And what they'll want to do is they'll want to answer some questions about that data. Like, am I on track? Am I on budget? Where am I losing the most money?
Who's spending the most time on this?
Who's spending the most time? Yeah. Like, where is, you know, if it's, let's say if it's a forestry industry, like, what's taking the longest? Do we have some equipment that isn't working right? So they'll have a lot of these questions, and they actually already have the data to answer all of these things. They just don't have a way to present that back to them in a way that makes sense. And so usually these are big companies, so they already have some kind of solutions in place to try and solve that. But these are all kind of like off-the-shelf solutions that kind of work and kind of don't work in some ways. And so what we do is our philosophy is we're not going to come in and replace what you have. We're just going to extend it. So we're going to connect up to all of the different things that you already have in your company. And we'll build you a really nice, clean web app essentially, that anybody can access anywhere on your phone, from home, in your company, where you can go in and you can immediately see what's going on with my company and answer all of the different types of questions you have.
That's pretty awesome. Are you using any like machine learning or anything like that with the data? Because I guess you're collecting so much data, it can be tough to analyze, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually have a data science team internally whose entire job is to grab all of this stuff, look at it, look at the types of questions people are asking and see, can we actually just get computers to solve this problem for us so we don't need a bunch of people to look over millions and millions of rows of databases and stuff.
So. Nice. So how many people do you have at Cumulate?
So right now our team is, I'm going to say, about 20 people or so. It kind of moves up very slowly from time to time.
So what sort of titles do people have?
So we have a pretty big design team. So we're very heavy on making things look good, making things work well. Because the whole point is that we really want to build you something that's actually useful and that makes sense to you. And if you know anything about design, that's pretty personal.
So it's a strong user experience side of things.
It's extremely strong, and our designers are actually really amazing. They're able to pull off some really incredible stuff, given you know the fact that we don't know anything about some of these industries that we work in.
I mean, tracking files can be not very sexy, I guess.
No, it's super super boring, right? So so they're able to take stuff that can actually be kind of boring and one make it actually beautiful and super useful. So we have like a team of six designers now. Then a lot of developers, both front end, back end, mobile, that sort of thing.
And machine learning.
And some machine learning science experts, data science experts,
Sweet. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, we like to talk about the tech stack, about how this whole thing comes together. You're tracking all these files, all these assets, you're analyzing all this data. How does it all fit together?
Yeah, so for the movie industry, we were using the whole movie industry, like I said, is all in Python. Mm-hmm. So to make things easier for us, all of our software is also written in Python.
Oh, cool, nice.
And then we have a web app kind of that sits on top of it. And this was written a while ago, so we were using Backbone because that was the sexiest thing at the time.
Oh yeah.
And it was working pretty well. Yeah. It was working pretty well for us, and so we're still kind of going. And then when we started transitioning over to other industries, we obviously needed something way more flexible because the idea is, so this is like the worst case scenario for a developer, right? So the situation is you don't know what's coming ahead. You don't know who you're going to be working with. And you got to build something really fast that just works with everything, right? That's like, how the hell do you design for that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the whole idea was to, okay, we got to pick some technologies and we got to build this thing in a way that it's just completely agnostic to what we encounter. Mm. So we settled on writing a lot of our backend in Go, mainly because we just wanted this thing to compile on any platform and to be super duper fast. And Go seemed like a good choice there.
Right.
For the front end, we kind of found this thing called React. I don't know if you guys know about this thing.
Sounds familiar. How do you spell that? That's awesome.
Yeah, so we've kind of jumped on the React bandwagon and haven't looked back because it's been working really well for us.
So you actually did a 1-hour talk at their Vancouver React JS meetup a while back. When was that?
Yeah, so this was a few months ago now. We kind of got onto the React bandwagon pretty early on. This was when React wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. So it was actually a pretty dangerous move at the time.
Right.
A lot of people didn't know if this thing was going to live or what it was. And
it did have some pretty good backing, and it seemed like it could go the long way.
It did, but it was also pushing some serious boundaries. It was like, what is this HTML thing inside my JavaScript? This is terrible.
You put HTML in my JavaScript. You put JavaScript in my HTML.
Yeah, this is never going to work. So it was a pretty dangerous move. So we got in there pretty early. And because of that, we actually ended up learning a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. About React and how to build stuff and how to build things in a way that's going to scale. And so I kind of was hoping to see somebody else in Vancouver who was kind of suffering through that same pain, and I didn't really see anybody. So I was like, you know, why don't I see if anybody, you know, was interested in this conversation? So I decided to give a talk and then kind of get to know the community in Vancouver that builds stuff with React. Cause you know, at that, you know, about a few months ago, there was enough people doing that stuff. So, I gave a talk basically talking about all of the different lessons we learned along the way. And actually, I got some really, really great positive feedback on that, to the point where I actually wanted to get involved with the React JS Vancouver group.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm the co-organizer of that meetup.
Awesome. Nice.
And we're trying to get more people.
Yeah, we had Brian Clark. He's the lead. Lead of the Mozilla's DevTools team.
Yep.
And they're doing all their stuff in React as well now. So that does seem pretty interesting. There might be some overlap with that. The React community is actually pretty big and growing.
It's getting pretty big now, yeah. Mm-hmm. There used to be the point where you say the word React and people are like, what is that? You mean like reactive development?
Yeah.
Now it's pretty
now people know what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that seems pretty awesome. We'll put a link down below to the video of that because it looks like there's a YouTube link.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
Now let's talk a little bit about Linux Magic. What's up with Linux Magic? And what's your role?
So Linux Magic was a company I worked at when I was still in high school. So I was doing some summer work there.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the idea there is that this is a company that works primarily in the IT space.
Mm-hmm.
So they a big thing, like their main product is they build email servers for hosting companies.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, your Shaws and Dellises of the world, but
yep.
but smaller ones as well. They also do a lot of work with security and anti-spam and that sort of thing. So this was kind of my first foray into the development world when I was still in high school. And I've always kind of stuck around and followed up with what the company is doing, and I got to know the CEO there really well. He's a really great guy, and he got to the point where the company was, you know, starting to do pretty well, and they wanted to form a board of directors, and they asked me if I wanted to be part of that.
Awesome.
And I was like, "Whoa, that's pretty cool. I've never done anything like that before."
Mm-hmm.
So that was a pretty interesting move for me, and so now I kind of get a nice point of view on the tech industry from this perspective that I've never been at before, right? So as a developer, you're kind of, you know, in the ground working on your thing, building a lot of cool software. But from a point of view of a board of a company that does that stuff, you get a pretty interesting vantage point in terms of, you know, what are the challenges of finding developers and how hard is it to run a company that builds software and completely different types of questions.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I'm doing with Linux Magic now is I sit on the board and I try to figure out, you know, why is it so hard to find developers in Vancouver?
Yeah, we were actually just talking about what's the most popular programming language in Vancouver.
I thought it was kind of neat because I'm just looking at Linux Magic's employment page and it looks like there's hiring for three different positions. Looks like inside sales rep, PHP programmer, and practicum positions as well. Yeah. So for people looking for practicums, that's pretty interesting place to go. I thought something that stuck out to me was for the inside sales representative qualifications, high school graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't be a high school dropout.
No, I'm sorry, no.
Okay, maybe. I've always thought of the qualifications as being kind of recommended qualifications.
Of course, yeah. Any job posting. Actually, this is a good tip for anybody looking for jobs is read the job description, but don't read it as gospel.
Yeah.
These are things that the companies are trying to look for. It doesn't mean you have to know all these things.
Yeah, and the landscape's changing a lot as well. So I think even in your case, when you started as an animator and ended up being a lead developer at a company, and the company changed as well, and you changed, and so roles and times and everything changes. That's kind of cool.
I always found it funny that there's this... when Node was really new, there was like all these people posting jobs for Node, Node.js.
20 years experience, minimum.
Node had been out for maybe like 2 or 3 years, and then there's resumes or there's postings out there saying 5+ years of Node experience. It's well,
I've seen something very similar with React as well. You got to be expert level React developers. Like, who is? It's just been around
React
for like
2 years old.
So what is the most popular programming language in Vancouver?
So that was that's something we were talking about. Somebody asked, if I'm looking for a job and moving to Vancouver, what sort of language would be beneficial to having and looking for that job? And we're like, how do you even know that? And I guess it kind of depends on what you want to work in. And we also came to the conclusion that had the question: are there many places? So you said maybe Humulate is mostly Python, but would you if somebody applied for Humulate and they're like, well, I've got 10 years experience in developing in Ruby, but I've never touched Python. Are you going to say, hey, there's the door, get out of here? Or are you going to, talk to the person, look at their development experience and say, you know what? They could probably pick up Python pretty quickly. I think Python's actually relatively easy to pick up in general, but, I don't think that many people are going to turn you away.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, that's a really great point. I mean, one of the things that I've been kind of thinking about doing is I want to do a talk about some of the misconceptions about going through an interview process.
Mm-hmm.
Like that being one of them, the fact that, you might have 20 years of Ruby experience.
Right.
So you might think, well, I guess I got to find a job doing Ruby because that's all I know. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big misconception. If you've been developing something for 20 years, no matter what language it is, you've faced all of the same problems that you're going to face in every other language.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you might want to write it in a different language has no impact on whether or not you're a good developer or not.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, people who are hiring developers, they're looking for people who can solve problems, not who know a particular language, right?
Mm-hmm.
One thing on my to-do list is I have a list of things that I've kind of made notes on because I've gone through a lot of interviews now where I'm like hiring developers.
Right.
And I've seen a lot of patterns where people are assuming certain things that I think are not quite true. Like they think, I'm a junior, so they must, want this particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like generally companies are looking for good people.
Right.
That's number one priority. The second priority is that they're a good developer.
Yeah.
So if you're a good person and you can solve problems and you know how to learn, that's the most important thing. So yeah, that's totally to your point.
Something we didn't mention was maybe you probably can't demand the same salary level. That's probably the only real difference is like if you're an expert in Ruby and you're jumping into a job where it's going to be your first time writing Python. Like you might expect a different salary. That might really be the only thing that's really going to hurt you.
I wouldn't even agree with that, to be honest. I think they're kind of independent of each other, and it depends on the situation.
I think
but I
don't think you would be able to demand an expert level salary in Python being a first time Pythoner. You might get a little bump over someone that maybe is a junior, quote unquote. But as far as like being an expert in one language, jumping
so that I definitely disagree with.
You might
I would
not
say
be able to get
if you go in as a senior level developer. and you might not have a lot of experience with Python, you're not going to get a little bump over a junior. There's quite a difference in mindset, in understanding, in theory, in how to solve problems. Mm. So the fact that the tool set's a little bit different. And I think especially in this case, though, this kind of an unfair comparison, I think, that you're making, James, because Python's really easy, I think, to pick up for a Ruby developer in general.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe
it's a little bit of a difference of some white spaces, and maybe there's some more C-style syntax in some of the...
I didn't mean literally Ruby to Python. I mean, going from some language to another and being not an expert, it might be hard for the company to justify matching the salary of the other lead developer sitting beside, given your experience.
Yeah. I guess
that's all
depends,
about. That's all what salary is, mostly, is experience.
Yeah,
that's really the number one thing that it drives.
And I can give you a good story. So, like I said, so our original software was written in Python, and then now we've transitioned almost entirely to Go. And so what that meant is that, you know, we had a lot of some senior Python guys who've been doing this thing for, you know, 20 or so years, who are now learning a language that they've played around with for a week.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. And in the case of Go, like our main backend engineer, our lead backend developer, he's been writing Python for like 20 years or something. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and when he moved over to Go, he said it took him a couple of months, but now he feels like he's a way better Go programmer than he ever was a Python guy.
Oh, really?
He can he can do it way faster, way better, and that sort of thing. So,
and I think it makes sense because if you spend so much time with one certain thing, then you're missing a whole perspective on everything that I think having that, it's kind of like you could live your life never having looked in a mirror, you know, and you have no idea how other people see you.
Sure.
But then once you have that mirror, you have that other perspective. I think other languages can maybe do that.
Yeah, I mean, Drew was able to pick up Go for an API that you were writing at work, right? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be in production, right? And that's going to be a thing that's used at your company.
Yeah,
something that took over a month, maybe a month and a half to get done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing to think about it is as you learn more and more languages, the next one becomes easier. It's kind of like actual, like real languages, you know, if you know English and French and Spanish, learning German is not that big a deal, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So same thing with programming languages. As you learn more and more, they get easier and easier. And actually your experience as a developer grows because now you know all of the different little caveats of all of the different languages, and that makes you a better developer. Like I found there was a point where I was writing just a lot of JavaScript, and then just for my job I had to write a lot of Go. So I did that for a couple of months. And then when I went back to writing JavaScript again, I found that I was writing it completely differently because I was in a completely different mindset. So now I'm thinking about all these things like static typing and like things that don't exist in JavaScript. And I started missing certain features and trying to find ways to do things in a different way. And that actually made me a better developer.
That's kind of interesting. It was something I was looking at your LinkedIn and looking at the different technologies used in the current stack. And I thought, you know, React. I thought, yeah, of course, you kind of gravitated toward React because you're using Python. This is something I've got kind of anecdotally, something that I think I've noticed is that people that tend to have more of a scripting language background, Ruby, JavaScript, Python, tend to lean toward React and the React, I guess, universe. Whereas people who come from more like a C# or a statically typed language tend to really like Angular. I don't know that this is always going to hold true, but just anecdotally from what I've seen, that's kind of what I've seen. And we're using Angular at work, and we have a lot of people that come from C#.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I've seen TypeScript pop up a lot, too.
Yeah.
It has some of those things like strict typing and all this type of stuff that you might miss from Go.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's the same implementation. I've never used it, but from what I understand, through the grapevine, it can be that good crossover that people love of like statically typed mixed with JavaScript and all that.
Yeah, there's a lot of solutions for JavaScript to add those types of features. They all have kind of pros and cons, so it's a bit scary to jump into that world if your entire team isn't on board. So
well, there's something nice I think about writing something with I guess like with Ruby, for example. You write something, you might not be sure what sort of type it expects or what sort of gives, and you might have some sort of checks to handle different things, and it's just kind of really this is expecting this here. I'm just going to throw in an empty hash. Now we're fine. And it's really stuff that you would never do or even be able to do, I don't think, in Go, where it really expects you to define your types. You know what's going in.
Yeah,
you know what's coming out.
You got to really know what you're doing in Go. You're like, ahead of time.
Yeah.
So. And those are things that, like, at first I struggled with a lot. And then I was like, you know what? This is actually really nice because you don't have all these gotchas that you might have other places. And you don't have all of this sort of magic going on behind the scenes. That was something I really liked about Go, actually, and the Go community, was that it seemed like everybody kind of expects you to to figure it out yourself and do something yourself, but do it with Idiomatico. Don't just grab a framework.
Yeah. You know? And I think it actually kind of goes back to my original point where it's like, don't be afraid to learn new languages. Like, mm-hmm. we have several people who come in for interviews and they'll start off their introduction with, I'm a blank developer. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a C++ developer. Python developer. It's like, okay, well, that's good that you think about yourself that way. But I think a good developer should just be a good developer. It doesn't matter what language you happen to have been writing for the last little while. Mm-hmm. You know, explore, try different things, learn different languages, and think of yourself as a good problem solver, not as a good C++ guy. Mm-hmm.
What do you think a polyglot is? When do you become a polyglot? Because we've talked about this before in the past with the Polyglot Vancouver meetup. When do you think you become a polyglot?
I think I think a good mark for that is, let's say you're writing a new project and, okay, so you know, you're going to have to build something new and you have to decide what languages to use. Mm-hmm. If you think to yourself, oh, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. That's when you know.
Okay. So when it becomes, you're like the Matrix, you can just see it all. You just know which one. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the problem is.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, I guess today I'll write it in Python.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Think about it now. I don't know, Drew, if you say this to people. I just say full stack developer. I don't usually... like pick a language.
So that, full stack developer, I think, is also a really interesting term, because what does it mean? And I think with web development, then it might mean, you know, back end and front end.
Yeah.
But some people might think, like, are you developing your operating system? Are you doing, you know, kernel level stuff?
Yeah,
what do you mean by full stack?
Yeah.
And personally, I don't really I don't spend much time doing front end, so I wouldn't call myself full stack.
Yeah.
I honestly think that, the whole full stack developer title is a bit of a lie. I think we're kind of lying to ourselves, because I think the whole idea of being a full stack developer is that it implies that your day to day, you're mm-hmm. writing both some client level code and then some back end level code,
yeah.
whatever that happens to be. Maybe it's server or client, maybe it's like operating system,
mm-hmm.
but that might work if you're in a tiny little team of five people and you have
or
to do
that.
Or if
you're in like a web agency.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that you're describing
projects.
My day. Like
exactly.
I'm writing CSS.
Yeah.
Like I write CSS and then I write PHP and then I write JavaScript and then I write HTML.
Right.
And then I write Bash scripts and then I write a little bit of this, or there's a node server on the side.
Yeah.
Or,
but as soon as
so
your team, you know, gets more than like 10 people, it's incredibly inefficient to have one guy do everything, right? So
yeah,
you
yeah.
want to start splitting things up. So even though you might know how to do both client and server, you're probably only going to be doing one or the other at any given time.
Like in my past job, I really only did back end. I started with front end. I was shifting towards this middle ground. Then I was mostly doing back end. I almost never touched the front end until this new job that I have now, where I do a lot more development
mm-hmm.
from day to day. Now I do a lot more, like I'm doing CSS and JavaScript, and then I'm doing a bunch of back end stuff with like APIs and all that junk. So it's really, I think it depends on your position, but our team was very small. So we did have those isolated roles, but that was on purpose.
Right.
Versus like, you know, with a team, you have that turnover or whatever. People come, people go. Some people, like, they're sick, and then, oh, somebody has to fill in this gap or whatever. So I think it depends on where you work. But I think Drew's right. I think it's just the agency life. It's you basically, someone just throws a problem at you, whether that's legacy or brand new, and you have to solve it some way.
Go do it. Yeah. See you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So let's actually, I wanted to ask a little bit about some of the challenges you might be facing at Humulate. Where are you located?
So we are located in Mount Pleasant.
In Mount Pleasant.
So you know where like Kingsway ends and becomes this like weird triangular fork?
Yep. So one of the perfect places to commute to if you have a bike and you like ride around in Vancouver like everybody does.
We have a giant bike room and it's always full. It's incredible.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet. I know that a lot of companies, I think Amazon's hiring something like 300 and Microsoft as well. And so, I mean, there's already these like 1,000 jobs that are being looked for, and then smaller companies are looking for developers. Is it difficult to find developers?
I would say right now it's incredibly difficult to find developers. So as a developer, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we have this never-ending stream of jobs we can
line up. My job search lasted
line up, right?
10 days,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
so
that was a long time.
It's an amazing time to be a developer right now, especially in Vancouver. But what that means is, for a company who's hiring developers, you have a hard time. Mm-hmm. So you really got to figure out, what do developers actually want?
Yeah. Mine lasted one text message.
Oh, nice. That's all right.
I think that might be a new world record.
Yeah, that might be a record. I don't even know if they count that as a text message. That was like a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might have been zero down.
There's a little bit more, I guess, after that. But
well, yeah.
There was a reply.
Yeah. So,
two text messages.
Yeah. To answer your question, like, it's pretty hard to find good developers.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of developers, and we're finding that mostly there's a lot of juniors, because there's now a lot of schools and putting
the
out
boot camps as
well. Yeah, and the boot camps. Mm-hmm. And And at first, I was actually, you know, a little wary about hiring people who, you know, only done this for a couple of months. But I'm seeing some of these, you know, boot camps putting out some really solid people who know their stuff and can jump into a team and start building stuff on day one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been pretty good. But yeah, it's hard to find good people, especially if you want some senior people who have been doing something for a while. They usually get, you know, are sitting on some good jobs.
Do you think Vancouver being in Vancouver makes it a little harder just because of the cost of living or the situation with commuting
as opposed
and all
this
stuff?
To somewhere like
Like somewhere like if you're in Utah or something, or even like South Carolina is another place, or North Carolina, there's these like they call it Silicon Prairie, like those places, the cost of living is so cheap and so the salary is like amazing, so it's, you know, people move there, they get the salary that maybe they were making in the big city but with country living prices. That's a lifestyle thing.
So the
thing,
two places that you mentioned happen to be in the States and also have good weather.
Sure.
We have the best weather in Canada.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, I'll let Ev answer, but what do you think? Do you think that affects things? Or
I think probably yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always really hard to measure that sort of stuff, right? Yeah. I mean, you don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'd have an easier time finding developers if you lived in Nunavut?
I think you'd have a harder time finding people.
If there's unemployed developers in Nunavut, then yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how many developers want to live up there. It's pretty cold.
Yeah. Developer slash, wilderness survivor.
So what sort of hiring is Cumulate doing? And what are you doing to look for developers?
So we're hiring everybody. We're hiring front-end people, back-end people, designers, people who know how to build mobile apps. So basically anybody who knows how to write good code.
So that's actually for your mobile apps. Do you lean toward React Native because you have React in your stack, or do you prefer native apps?
Yeah, so that's actually one product that I haven't talked about yet. So we do have a third product that we're just about to launch, and that's called Sky. Mm-hmm. And that's a mobile app that's got nothing to do with, you know, assets or tasks or managing files. And it's really designed for the everyday user. You know, your grandma could use it.
Oh, wow.
And so the idea there is that, you know, we all have some data in our lives, right? Maybe you're running a website and you got like some Google Analytics hooked up to it. Maybe you got a spreadsheet lying around. Mm-hmm. And let's say you want to, you have some questions like, hey, how does my web traffic compare to the spreadsheet where I'm tracking all of my, I don't know, all of my tasks. Mm-hmm. So you can actually merge the two together in our app right on your mobile device, and it'll do a bunch of really smart AI.
Can you just take a picture of the spreadsheet?
You just upload it in, and it will.
So you actually have to have a file.
Yeah,
it can't just be a written spreadsheet.
It's not that smart, but maybe one day.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you kind of merge these two things together. It'll look for patterns for you, and then it'll tell you, hey, it looks like August 15th, you were doing a whole bunch of work, and a whole bunch of people came to your website at the same time. Could there be a pattern there?
Oh, nice. That's
so
cool.
So you kind of merge a whole bunch of different things all in one place, and it'll give you something interesting about that. Mm-hmm. And so that thing is written with React Native. Mm-hmm. And obviously we did that because we had an existing React background. But we also, it was an interesting discovery, because we sat in a room and we're like, okay, we're going to have to build a mobile app. What are our options? Okay, well, option number one, obviously, we just write it native, right? Mm-hmm. But now we need an entire team who knows Android development and a separate team who knows iOS development and whatever else we decide. So that's going to be slow and expensive. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it'll, you know, give us the best result. So that's option A. Option B is, you know, something like Cordova, right? Where you write the whole thing in HTML and we have a whole bunch of guys who know how to write web apps.
Sure.
So that will be really fast. But we want to do a whole bunch of like really fancy like data analytics and presentations on the app. So I don't know if it's going to be performant enough. Mm-hmm. So we kind of scared about that. And then literally as we were having this discussion, Facebook announces React Native. Mm. And we're like, man, this is almost exactly what we need.
Yeah.
But they only just announced it. We can't even try it out yet.
Yeah.
So we kind of sat around for a little bit. You know, let's wait until they publish this thing. Let's give it a go. And we give it a go, and it's been working out really well for us.
Nice.
It's been working out really great. So, and the thing is, like, going back to your question, is like, are we hiring React Native developers? Well, there are no React Native developers.
Yeah.
That's a myth. I mean, they don't exist yet. So it goes back to we're just looking for people who know how to build mobile apps. So if you've been building Android mobile apps, you can build mobile apps on React Native. It's the same problems, the same challenges, just a different language.
Mm-hmm. I think the cool thing is that your team is probably having the same challenges. Like, you're all learning at the same time, right? There might be some people that know a little bit more, some people that know a little bit less, but there's still that whole, like, breaking new ground feeling, I bet, right?
Yeah, for sure. it's especially bad when new people come on. Like, there's a pretty huge curve, like, yeah, to get over. But the nice thing I found is that because, like, I don't know, being a developer these days is way easier than being a developer, like, 10 years ago, right? You have so many amazing tools, and it's so easy.
And faster internet and quick resources. So, right? I mean, you Google something, you exactly, can find Stack Overflow has answers to almost everything.
I'm not going to say it's easy. I'm just going to say it's much easier than it used to be. Yeah, so you can get going really fast and build much better stuff than you would be able to. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you kind of get that initial set of skills, people are off and they're doing their thing, and then they're just contributing day to day, and it's pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right. Well, if we want to get a hold of you, see you at any of the meetups, how do we reach out to you?
So you can find me on Twitter. It's Ev with my weird last name, Nevernuke.
We'll put a link down below.
Yeah, that's awesome. You can find me there. That's probably the easiest way.
Yeah.
And then the job posts as well on the Cumulate website, right?
Yeah, so there's job posts on the Cumulate website. There's also job posts for Linux Magic if you're curious about how to, you know, build really complex security stuff for networks. Nice. Yeah.
And also you are a co-organizer of the React.js meetup, so I guess we can see you at that. What other meetups might you attend?
Yeah, I'm only kind of just getting into the whole meetup world. I know you guys are involved in that a lot. Yeah. So what should I go to? What are some of the most amazing meetups?
HackerNest. It's coming up next Monday, I guess. Yeah. Actually, next week. So
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also isn't there a Go one?
There is. That doesn't happen as often as you'd like. I think they have some good speakers that come in from time to time, but it just doesn't happen that often.
Oh, learn data science would be a good one. If you're looking for data scientists, that's a big place for people to go.
Mm-hmm. Cool. The DevTools meetup for sure, because there's some. It's just awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, I'll try to get out to all of those.
Yeah, cool.
Awesome. Okay, well, Ev, thank you very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.